Welcome to Speak Up, the official podcast of Speech Pathology Australia. We bring you insightful conversations with leading professionals about key issues and innovations in speech pathology, all in a concise format that's perfect for your busy schedule. We aim to inform, inspire, and also engage. We love hearing from you, so please join the conversation on our social media platforms or email us with your thoughts and questions. And please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. Your support helps us grow and inform, inspire and engage others. Now, let's embark on today's conversation. Hi, and welcome to Speak Up. This is Nadia, and today I'm recording from the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung and Boonwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation. For our episode today, we're going to be talking with Rosie Miller from the Professional Standards Team. Hi, Rosie. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Nadia.
So, Rosie, we're going to be talking a little bit about auditing and also the certification requirements of becoming and maintaining certified practicing speech pathologist status with SPAR. So can you start us out a little bit by talking about what the certification requirements of becoming CPSP is and how we do that?
Certainly. So certification has two main components. One is the continuing professional development requirement. And for most of us, or for all of us, really, that's an annual requirement. Mm-hmm. And that includes accrual of at least 20 hours of learning. And those 20 hours of learning must include at least 2 hours of cultural learning. Mm-hmm. And cultural learning is Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander specific learning. Mm-hmm. We also must engage in at least 2 hours receipt of professional support. Mm-hmm. And SPAR defines professional support very broadly. Mm. So professional support is provided to practitioners to assist them to develop the quality of their work and confidence to practice. And it could include supervision, it could include mentoring, could include coaching, peer support, peer supervision, communities of practice. And it doesn't need to be provided by a speech pathologist as long as it's relevant to your professional practice. But the key difference is that it's receipt of professional support, not provision. So if you engaged in provision of professional support and there was learning associated with that, then I would record that under other learning.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's good to know.
Okay, the other component is recency of practice. Mm-hmm. And the recency of practice requirement depends on a number of factors, one of which is when you completed your degree, whether you're provisional or a full certified practicing speech pathologist, and if you've completed the reentry program, the years since you completed that program. So there are a number of different factors associated with the recency of practice requirement that applies to you.
Yeah. So most of the people there listening today who are members with SPAR would probably be certified practicing speech pathologists, and they wouldn't be provisional or anything like that, would they? That's just the first 18 months or up to 3 years of practice for somebody that's just come out of university, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I wonder if it's also worth us talking very briefly about why we have these requirements. So why we have the 1,000 hours in particular.
Certainly. The certification requirements, I guess, broadly they function as a mechanism to protect the public.
Yeah, great.
And the recency of practice requirements in particular align with the standards set by NASRAP, the National Alliance of Self-Regulating Health Professions. As a full member of NASRAP, SPAR has to meet or comply with the standards that are set by NASRAP. And one of those standards relates to auditing.
Yeah.
And NASRAP stipulates that their member organisations must audit at least 5% of their members each year.
Yeah.
And right. And they must audit both CPD, continuing professional development, and recency of practice.
Okay. Well, I think that leads us really nicely to talk a little bit about what a certification audit is.
Certainly. Yeah. So essentially it's a compliance check, mm-hmm. And the focus of which is to confirm that certified practicing speech pathologists have met the minimum certification requirements. Mm-hmm. And certification audits can be conducted on certified practicing members as well as certified practicing non-members.
Right, yeah.
So when we join or renew as a certified practicing member of SPA, we complete a certification declaration. And in that declaration, we declare that we have met the CPD requirement and the applicable reasonancy of practice requirement. And we also agree to provide documentation, if requested by SPA, to verify compliance. So that is what that relates to, cooperating with an audit if we are randomly selected. Yeah. So in a sense, it's what we sign up for. If we're a certified practicing speech pathologist, we actually do sign up for the obligation to cooperate with an audit if we are selected.
Right. Yeah. We talked a little bit about the fact that this is something that NASRAP ensures that SPA is doing to make sure that there's that level of safety for the public that are accessing speech pathology services. Are there other reasons that Speech Pathology Australia will do a certification audit?
In some cases, there might be a targeted audit. So, for example, if the ethics team, for example, requests the certification auditing team to audit a particular member for whatever reason, then yes. So in some cases, there might be a targeted audit.
Yeah. And look, those are extremely rare. They are potentially things that might come out of, for example, a formal complaints process. That could be something that would happen at that point in time if there were some concerns. There were some discrepancies potentially in what people were seeing. But yeah, we've both been here about 5 years. Have you ever seen one of those?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. So very, very, very rare. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. So about, you said about 5% of the membership, and Speech Pathology Australia earlier this year just got over 15,000 members. So that's quite a number of people, I imagine, that are still going through an audit every year.
It is. And as the membership grows, so too does the number of audits that need to be completed each membership year. So that's an ongoing challenge for us.
Yes, we're going to have to clone you sometime soon, Rosie.
So this membership year, which is 2023-2024, about 600 audits need to be completed. Yeah, so yeah, it's a sizable number.
Yeah.
And because selection is random, some members can be selected more than once.
Yeah, often, right.
often members say, look, I've been audited before, why am I being selected again?
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a random process.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know some members have been audited twice, three times.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
I imagine that feels quite overwhelming in that point in time. So if somebody is selected, well, about 600 people are likely to be selected this year. So what is the process? What do you need to be able to provide?
Yeah, good question. So as mentioned, selection is random and you'll be notified by email. And in that email should be a link to instructions. So there should be detailed information about what you need to provide. Mm-hmm. You'll also receive an SMS reminder and two follow-up email reminders as well. And most members will get about 4 weeks to complete their audit submission. Yeah, so most members will need to provide evidence for both the CPD and recency of practice components of the audit, mm-hmm. but there are some exceptions. So, for example, if you're provisional and you're selected for an audit, then only the CPD component of the audit applies.
Yeah, that makes sense because you might not have hit those 1,000 hours at that stage, right?
Well, if you're provisional, you have at least 3 years to accrue 200 practice hours, mm-hmm. Plus some additional CPD requirements to enable you to be eligible to transition from provisional to full. So if you're selected for an audit when you're provisional, only the CPD component would apply.
And is that a similar sort of thing for people that are going through the re-entry process?
Yeah, well, at present, if you've completed re-entry and you're selected for an audit, depending on the time that's lapsed since you completed re-entry. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if it's less than 4 years since you completed re-entry and you're selected for an audit, then only the CPD component of the audit applies. That's because currently re-entry members have 4 years to accrue 200 practice hours.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. So very similar to what happens with people that have just come out of university as well. Yeah,
it
great.
It is similar. Yeah. In terms of what you need to provide, what sort of evidence you need to provide, for CPD, you will need to complete your online log for the previous membership year. And it's the previous membership year because when you last renewed SPA, you submitted hours of learning for the previous membership year.
Right.
Yeah. And you made a declaration that in that previous membership year, you had met the CPD requirements.
Mm-hmm.
You also declared that you had met the recency of practice requirements.
So it's not going to be the year that we're currently in because we haven't actually declared that for that year yet. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And this is often a point of confusion. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
So the CPD audit period is the previous membership year.
Okay. And so for the CPD, you're filling out the log, which we all have access to, and we can fill it out as we go anyway. So if you've already done your homework, that's one less thing to worry about there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So complete the online log for the previous membership year. And in terms of CPD evidence, members will have an option. So you can either upload documentary evidence such as certificates or copies of notes or screenshots, or you could choose to complete the reflection fields, the key learnings and the impact on practice fields. So you don't need to do both for each log entry. So your submission, your log, might include a mixture of uploaded documents and a mixture of completed reflection fields, or it could just be you might choose to just complete the reflection fields. So I think that's very much in alignment with the philosophy of the certification program, that it's outcome focused, that it's focused on learning rather than just the time that you spend in a workshop. I think, and also if you think about some of the learning activities that we might engage in, for example, in cultural learning, some of those informal activities like reading a book or listening to a podcast or going on a cultural tour or in engaging in yarns with Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander people, then, you know, you're not going to get a certificate at the end of that.
Yeah.
So a short reflection is probably more appropriate. And the auditors are not expecting a long reflection. So just a few dot points in the key learnings and impact on practice field is all that's required. Again, the focus of the audit is simply to confirm that members have met the minimum requirements. Many speech pathologists would have engaged in many more hours of learning than, you know, 20 than what's required. And so from an auditing perspective, we're only going to look at the evidence that supports the minimum requirements. So we don't expect members to supply evidence for every, you know, for the the CPD that they've completed beyond the minimum requirements.
Yeah, don't need to be writing essays or anything like that. There's just a couple of things to be able to be confident. Yeah, okay, great. What about the recency of practice? What does the evidence look like for that?
Yeah, sure. So if you're an employee, a letter or a statement of service from your employer would be sufficient. Or alternatively, you could provide an employment contract plus a stat deck. So the purpose of the employment contract is to confirm your role as a speech pathologist. And the stat deck is where you would attest to meeting the minimum practice hour requirement.
And if you are an employer or if you are somebody that's a sole practitioner, similar sort of thing?
No. So if you're a sole trader or are self-employed, then you would need to provide a letter from your accountant that confirms your occupation and that you've met the recency practice requirement based on an appraisal of your income. Or some accountants may only feel comfortable to confirm your occupation or your main salary and wage occupation, in which case you would need to provide the letter from your accountant and a stat deck, and the stat deck would have a statement in it like, I attest to having met the minimum recency practice requirement of X number of hours.
Yeah, okay. And 1,000 hours, that's not going to be a very much when you're thinking about full-time work, is it?
No. So the minimum 1,000 hour requirement applies to speech pathologists who completed their degree 5 or more years ago from the date of their last renewal. So that would apply to me and to you. And the 5-year period is where it gets confusing for some people. The 5-year period relates to your date of your declaration. So for me, I last renewed in June 2023. So the 5-year period is between 2018 and 2023. So I want to make sure that I have practiced for at least 1,000 hours in that 5-year period between 2018 and 2023. But yeah, you're right. 1,000 hours is not a lot. Roughly equivalent to working full time for about 27 weeks, working 3 days a week for 12 months, or working one day a week for 3 years. So,
So it's pretty safe to assume that most people would have met that criteria without any concern with that at all.
pretty much, yeah. If you completed your degree less than 5 years ago from the date of your renewal, then the minimum residency practice requirement is a minimum of 200 practice hours between the time that you completed your degree and your declaration.
Fair enough. And so, as a general rule of thumb, most of the time we're doing the declarations in the middle of the year, and so it's always going to be that June kind of date that you're
That's
looking back
correct. Yeah,
from.
usually. Yeah. So all the information about residency practice requirements is on the website, on the certification pages of the website. So I would strongly encourage members to become familiar with the residency practice requirement that applies to them.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes so that if people
Oh,
are
fantastic.
interested to be able to do that, they can do that without too much issue.
So I just wanted to flag that there's been a recent review of NASRAP's standards. So there are likely to be some changes to the minimum residency of practice requirements in the future. There's been no confirmation yet of what that will look like or when that might occur, but I just wanted to flag that's a possibility. If there are to be changes to the minimum residency of practice requirements, members will be informed in plenty of time, and there will be a transition period to ensure a smooth and fair transition for members.
Yeah, great. We'll keep our eyes open for that. Thanks, Rosie.
So Rosie, are there any differences between people who are transitioning from provisional, so fresh out of uni, to people that have been around for a little bit longer? Are there differences in how that declaration works and the requirements and all of those bits?
Yeah, certainly. So for members who declared eligibility to transition from provisional to full CPSP at their last membership renewal, there will be some additional pieces of evidence that they will need to require to provide if they are selected for an audit. So in addition to evidence to confirm that they've met the annual CPD requirements, they'll also need to provide evidence that they've completed the ethics and the evidence-based practice online modules, and that they've received at least 12 hours of supervision or mentoring since completing their degree. And they'll also, of course, need to provide evidence of recency of practice, which is at least 200 practice hours since completing their degree.
And so, for people that are transitioning from provisional to full CPSP with the practice hour requirements, is that the similar sort of thing that you would do in that auditing process, or is it just a declaration at that point in time that they've done 200 hours?
No, it's a similar requirement. So they would need to provide a letter or statement of service from their employer to confirm that they're employed as a speech pathologist and that they've worked at least 200 practice hours.
And people have got about 3 years from the time that they graduate until we would be expecting them to move from provisional to full CPSP as well,
That's
right?
correct. So 3 years, or if you completed your degree in December or November, December, for example, you would technically have 3.5 years because
Yeah, of course.
membership renewal doesn't align with, December or November. So, for example, if I completed my degree in December 2021, for example, I would have until membership renewal in 2025, which is June, July 2025, mm-hmm. to complete all of those requirements to transition from provisional to full. So that's, you know,
the 12 hours of supervision, 200 practice.
200 practice hours and completion of the
ethics modules, EBP modules. Do they also need to do however many relevant hours of cultural learning in that time as well?
Yeah, the annual CPD requirements apply to everybody, yep. whether you're provisional or full. Mm-hmm. So, yes, everybody has to
do those 2 hours per year. Yep.
Yeah, accrue at least 20 hours of learning and yep. Engage in at least 2 hours of cultural learning and yep. at least 2 hours of professional support.
Yeah, with professional support, I think, and with the other learnings, more than likely you will have hit those 20 hours quite neatly, I think.
So absolutely, yes.
It might just be the cultural learning that you need to make sure that you're across as well. And there are plenty of bits and pieces that we have that are free for members who are thinking about cultural learning as well. So we've got access to the IHA modules, which are fabulous. And we've got a couple of podcasts and a few other bits and pieces as well.
Yes, you're right. There are lots of fantastic learning opportunities on the Learning Hub related to cultural learning.
So, Rosie, I think that you've explained it really, really nicely, but I bet people are still worried when their name pops up in an audit.
Yes.
What sorts of things do you tell them to make them feel better about this process and to reassure them that it's going to be okay?
Yeah, I know. It can be very stressful receiving an audit notification, and I would like to reassure members that it is pretty straightforward. And we are kind. Yeah. We're here to help people. Like if they have questions, they can email us. The email address is cert@speechpathologyaustralia.org.au, or they can call us at national office. Some people are worried that, you know, 4 weeks is not enough. You can apply for an extension, particularly, you know, if you're ill, for example, or if you're overseas. So short extensions are usually not a problem. If there are extenuating circumstances, certainly those requests will go to the senior advisor and be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. Other things that people are worried about are if there's something missing, will someone contact me? Yes, we will. So if there's missing information or more evidence is required, we will contact you and we will give you time to provide that further evidence.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that this year, the 2023-2024 year, we've launched an online submission process to try and facilitate and make the process more efficient for us and hopefully easier for members. Mm. So once you've got all your evidence together, members will log into their member portal and then log into their MyCPD log. So once you're in the portal, you click on My Spa in the top right-hand corner and then click on My CPD Log. Mm-hmm. Then on the left-hand side, there's a button that says My Certification Audit. So when you're ready to submit, click on My Certification Audit and you will be stepped through the process.
Yeah.
So your previous year's online log will be displayed and you'll have the opportunity to add or to modify entries, and then the next step is you'll have the opportunity to upload your recency of practice evidence, and you can upload up to 3 documents. You don't have to upload 3 documents, you just need to upload sufficient documentary evidence that supports your recency of practice.
Yeah.
And then you read a declaration and you click on submit, and that's it. And as I said, if there is missing information, then someone from the auditing team will contact you and give you time to submit further evidence. And we're aiming to complete audits within a 2-week timeframe. So you should receive an email from SPA to confirm the successful outcome hopefully within 2 weeks at max. But during busy times, it might be a little bit longer.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And it sounds like if you're using the MyCPD log and making sure that you're adding things in as time kind of goes by, but also ensuring that you're potentially thinking about some of those reflections and just jotting them down, there shouldn't be a lot to do if this does come up, right?
Absolutely. And I think that segues really nicely into the key takeaway message from this podcast. And that is to keep your CPD log up to date. And I would really, although it's not mandatory, I would really encourage members to use the online log so that if you've completed your online log, and as you say, Nadi, if you've jotted down a few dot points in the key learnings and impact on practice fields, then, you know, you're halfway there. If you are selected for an audit, you know, the CPD component is done. You just need to, you'll just need to organise your recency of practice evidence. So,
yeah, it's a good idea generally, right? Because it's a nice opportunity to go back and reflect on those bits and pieces at that point in time. But also, I feel like when we often walk away from a particularly a PD event, I feel like you're really motivated in that moment in time to figure out what you'd like to do with it. But give it a month down the track and you might have forgotten some of that motivation and some of those bits that felt really meaningful. So being able to put that in straight away might be helpful for your practice as well as for if this comes up, right?
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, I had an email from a member who was audited recently, and she said, Rosie, I actually quite enjoyed this process. I actually enjoyed going back and reflecting on the learning from the previous year. So you're right. It's a really good process.
So being proactive is the key take-home message with all of this, and it's going to make your life a lot easier if you are selected.
Yeah. Absolutely. It'll make it quick and less stressful if you've at least completed your online log. Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Yeah. All right, Rosie, before we let you go today, the last thing I just want to check is there anything that you would recommend? Have you got a take-home message for people that are listening who are maybe worried about getting an audit notification? What sorts of things should people be keeping at the front of their mind about this?
I would strongly recommend that members keep their CPD records up to date. And I would also strongly recommend that members use the online log, because we're now using the online log in the audit process to increase the efficiency and ease for members. Many members may not have used the online log before. And if they are selected for an audit, yes, they can email their log and evidence to us, but we would strongly encourage an online submission, because it just makes the process much quicker and more efficient from our end. But also, I think there are benefits for members in terms of using the online log. You can upload your evidence to the log, or you can complete the reflection fields. And it, for example, if you move jobs, you know, you're not keeping your records within a workplace, or if you go on maternity leave or family leave, you know, if it's held centrally within an online log, then, you know, it doesn't matter. It's accessible wherever you are. So I think there are lots of benefits all around.
Yeah, definitely. All right, great. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom about this today. Hopefully we've made people feel a little bit more okay about this as a process. And if they do have an audit notification pop up, that hopefully it will be something that doesn't feel quite as overwhelming as it might have otherwise.
Absolutely. Yes, it shouldn't be stressful and it shouldn't be too time consuming.
Yeah. Great. Thanks so much for your time today.
You're most welcome, Nadia.
And thanks to everybody who's listening. Make sure you tune in for our next conversation. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's conversation. Please subscribe to the podcast and share with your colleagues and friends. You can also visit us at speechpathologyaustralia.org.au. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.